Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Seriously, the podcast from the New Statesman that takes pop culture seriously.
I'm Caroline Crampton.
And I'm Anna Leskovich.
This week, we're talking about Lorde's new album, Melodrama, and the new BBC singing show, Pitch Battle.
We've also read Naomi Alderman's dystopian novel, The Power, for the first time. So we'll be talking about how that went later in the show. Hello.
Hello.
Welcome back to another episode of Seriously. We're sifting through your emails, many, many emails as usual. We've got one from Madison who said she wanted to push back a little on our description of Wonder Woman as part of the quote born sexy yesterday trope, which she says she thinks we called sexy baby.
Yeah, I think that was me. I couldn't remember the name of it.
She says, while Diana has no personal experience with death or sexism before leaving the island, she is literally about 2,000 years old. What perhaps looks a little like naivety is just a radically different and far more positive view of the world than that of co-star Steve Trevor. That enthusiasm, compassion, and belief in the ultimate goodness of humanity are all characteristics she's had from her 1940s origins. Moreover, as a trope, Born Sexy Yesterday is usually in play with two-dimensional secondary characters who exist only as plot devices and romantic interests for male leads. Yeah, I guess she's right. And I think what we were talking about was just, we like that setup as a thing. I don't think we were trying to diss the script in that part, because I actually just love those kinds of moments and things.
Yeah, and I like it all the more in something like Wonder Woman, where it's used for comedy and for charm reasons, but doesn't imply in any way inferiority. It's not used as a power mechanism.
Yeah, we weren't really talking about the Born Sexy Yesterday trope, I guess, because that, yeah, is something, as Madison says, comes much more out of here's a one-dimensional extra person who's just going to go through this boring transformation. But we really just liked it as a setup, because we got to see Wonder Woman doing things like trying to hide a sword in a dress, which I like.
Now, this is an extremely exciting email from Sarah, who writes, "Hi ladies, long time listener, but really I have listened to every single episode since day one. I also happen to be the person who wrote both the Maritza Eats a Baby Mouse and Cindy Becomes Jewish stories you mentioned about Orange is the New Black on your latest episode, so cheers."
Aww.
So this is so exciting. This is someone who is a writer for lots of major TV shows, including Orange is the New Black, and as we've now learned, the writer of two of our favourite storylines.
Oh, I love those two so much, especially the Cindy Judaism conversion plotline, which I think I mentioned in the episode. But yeah, it's just literally sometimes I get teary just thinking about that storyline. It's so good.
And yeah, it's so exciting to me that someone who actually works on these kinds of things listens to
us
talking.
We're not worthy.
No, we're really not. But thank you anyway, Sarah. She also goes on to say, "I'm writing because I'd love to hear you talk about my personal favourite TV show of the last, I don't know how many years, the BBC's Happy Valley, in which Sarah Lancashire plays what I consider to be the best and most complicated and interesting female character I've ever seen in anything ever."
Yeah, we've heard so many good things about Happy Valley, haven't we?
Yeah, it's written by Sally Wainwright, who also wrote Last Tango in Halifax, and she was a writer for a long time for Coronation Street and various other things. And I actually went to a Q&A with her at BAFTA once,
oh, wow,
where they showed loads of clips of Happy Valley. Mark Lawson was the you know, he was doing the Q's and she was doing the A's. And he was obviously obsessed with Happy Valley because all of his questions were like 5 minutes long and were just so fannish and so like, and tell me how you did this bit and this bit and this bit.
That's so nice. And it was, I love things like that.
Such a great evening. But to my shame, I've never actually watched Happy Valley, which is something I think we should
correct. It's really, what a huge gap in the Seriously back catalogue. We must get onto that. Oh, also, stars, Seriously favourite, Grant Chester.
Does it really?
Yeah, I think he's the main villain.
I did not know that.
Yeah, so I should remember that. It's his real name, but forever Grant Chester in our hearts. Yep. I don't even know the real character name.
No, me neither, actually. No, I think
Vicar Handsome,
also known as Grant Chester, from Grant Chester. Anyway, thank you so much for this email, Sarah. It really, really cheered me up in a not very cheerful week.
Let's read one more email from the pile. We've had one from Sarah Martin Hainer, who says that she recently started listening. Shout out to her friend Inga, who recommended it. Shout out to Inga. She was wondering if we had watched Brooklyn Nine-Nine. She says it takes a little while to get to know the different characters, but it's her favourite show. Also her husband and toddler's favourite show as well. She says the Halloween and Christmas episodes are really great, but my favourite is the Mumps episode. Having not seen Brooklyn Nine-Nine, I mean, I don't know what the Mumps episode could possibly entail other than an outbreak of mumps.
But still, anything that has a Mumps episode, instantly I am disposed to that. As someone who grew up obsessed with school stories of all kinds, in which there's always a Mumps chapter, I am instantly interested in this.
Okay. Rolling on to the first thing that we're going to talk about this week. I feel like people would be able to guess what the first thing we're going to talk about this week is, because we have already talked about this person before on the show.
We have, and if you follow either of us on social media, you will have seen our deep excitement about this.
Yeah. So the first thing we're going to talk about is Melodrama, the second album from New Zealand singer Lorde. Coming almost 4 years after her debut, Pure Heroine, the pop record is produced by Jack Antonoff and loosely tells the story of one house party. So that's Melodrama, which I love as an album title, by the way.
Yeah, me too.
So great. I remember when she announced that the album was coming and she was like, M blank 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 A. And I was like, it's either going to be Melodrama or Monomania. And I love both those words. So this album came out on Friday and I grabbed onto it with my greedy, greasy paws. And I've barely stopped listening to it since. I don't know about you.
Same. I can't even count how many times I've listened through it. I did have a long train journey this weekend, like 2.5 hours, where I just listened to it on a loop the entire time.
Oh, that's so nice.
Which I haven't done with music, especially new music, in a really long time.
Yeah, well, Pure Heroine is one of my favourite albums, and I listen to it all the time, like all the time. Even like in the last, I don't know, year and a half, it's just been one of my most played albums.
Yeah, it's one of what I think of in my head as like ring-fenced albums, because my phone doesn't have much storage on it, and periodically I have to like delete music off it in order to have space for things, but I will never delete Pure Heroine.
Yeah, exactly. I so agree. And then I remember she gave some interviews way, way before the album came out, kind of saying like, oh, I love pop music, I love Carly Rae Jepsen, I love these people, and I want to do a really, you know, great pop album. And, you know, I love pop, I love Carly Rae Jepsen, I love Charlie XCX, I love that kind of music. But it made me kind of nervous because although Pure Heroine is like a pop album, I don't think you'd put it in the same kind of like colourful, bubbly space as those artists at all, because it's quite like dark and like very heavy drum beats and like just quite melancholic. So I was a bit like, ooh, like always love to see a new direction, but is Lorde the artist that I want to go down this route? And I'm like really pleasantly surprised that it's actually not a million miles away from her last album, but it does have some of those more colourful elements, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. So I'm likewise very interested and pleased to find out what Lorde thinks pop is, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So many things on this album are just completely blissful, so I just want to list some of them.
Okay.
One is her little spoken word asides.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely obsessed with these. I've listened to Homemade Dynamite like a million times just so I can hear that like quiet spoken word thing that she does.
Oh, where she goes like, now you know it's really gonna blow.
Yes. That.
That's so great.
I absolutely love that. It's so charming. I love her, this is a really nerdy singing point, but I love her diction.
Mm-hmm.
I love how in Writer in the Dark, she puts the k on dark.
Yeah. And is it writer?
Yeah.
Not rider.
Just, it's really precise and really meaningful for it, I think.
Yeah, I really like that this album kind of lyrically continues with a lot of the things that we know about Lorde. Like, there are certain things that she loves, like, I don't know, very violent metaphors and vignettes of memories, you know, whether it's riding with you in your car or whatever, but like just those little snapshots where you're like, oh, I can see that in my mind. And it kind of pieces together this very textured world, which is one of the things I like so much about her.
And she's so into the idea of parallels and doppelgangers and this kind of thing. So like at the beginning of Greenlight, the first track, I think the second line is, we order different drinks at the same bar. And then in my absolute favourite song from this album, Liability, the whole first verse and chorus is about how, you know, I know, I just want to cry even thinking about it, but the whole verse is how, you know, if I'm dancing with the girl I love, but actually, and she's saying, you know, the only one that I want to be with, we're dancing together, but actually if an outsider looked, you'd just see me going round and round in a circle, stroking my own cheek. So the idea is that, you know, she thinks that she's dancing with her best self.
Yeah.
And actually she's alone.
I love the description of that as well, where she like describes herself and she says she's so hard to please, but she's a forest fire. And I have friendships like that where you're like, this person is so demanding, but like also so rewarding. And it's weird to think of yourself in those terms and be like, yes, I am really hard on myself actually. And yeah, I'm kind of a nightmare to be in my own head. But do you know what? Like when I feel great, it is so amazing and it's a really rewarding relationship when I feel satisfied with myself.
Yeah, even the main chorus lyrics of that song are amazing, where she says, you're a little much for me, you're a liability. Oh, it's just so
good. It's so great. Yeah, and I like that there's a whole strain of like looking after yourself on this album that I really like. I think it's in Hard Feelings, where she says she lights candles all through her house and there's cut flowers in every room, and she says, I care for myself the way I used to care about you.
Yeah.
And I think she's so spot on with that thing where like you come out of a relationship and you feel so miserable, but then kind of as part of that, it's almost like inseparable from that is this idea that you like suddenly have more time for yourself and like get to indulge your own emotions and your own thoughts in a way that you maybe you haven't been able to before. And I think there's a line in Writer in the Dark where she says something like, I ride the subway, read the signs, I let the seasons change my mind.
I ride the subway, read the signs, I let the seasons change my mind. I love it here since I start needing you.
Yeah, I love that line.
Yeah, it's so nice, isn't it? Because I do think you become almost, maybe this is going too pretentious, but I feel like you do feel more in tune with the seasons when you're more in tune with yourself and when you're like kind of living with yourself a bit more.
That particular line spoke so much to a feeling that I always get every autumn, which is, I get the what I think is a fairly widespread thing of like, oh, it's autumn, it's back to school, I want new school shoes and a notebook. But then one of my friends always teases me about this, that all of my major breakups have been like in September, October. I always move house around that time. It's just a moment when I'm suddenly like, I need to change everything. Everything needs to be different because the seasons are changing. And just in that little line, I was like, oh, Lorde feels that feeling too.
Yeah, exactly. And then she says something like, I love it here since I stopped needing you. And I just think, yeah, it's amazing to look inside yourself and just find these absolute wells of, you know, things that you can sustain yourself on. And I think she calls it a secret power in Writer in the Dark. And yeah, I think it is something that writers probably specifically relate to quite a lot. But I think everyone relates to that idea that like actually suddenly you can find all this kind of love for yourself inside yourself. And that's like a really amazing thing to gain, even when you lose a relationship. Yeah, there's so much of that in this album, I think, even though there's loads of like, yeah, we're having a good time at the party. Also, I feel anxious about it, but we're having an okay time, I think. You know, there's all these kinds of competing emotions, but those are the moments that really stand out to me that kind of cut through the rest.
Yeah, so we've talked a lot about the lyrics and you wrote a really good piece about this that we'll link to as well. But what do you make of the sound of the album?
Oh, I just think it's great. Like, I love that she is so reliant on these like really heavy drum beats, but then there's something kind of ethereal going on at the same time. And I like that she can, you know, she can do like a piano ballad. I never thought I'd hear a piano ballad from Lorde.
There's quite a lot of piano on this album, actually, more than Pure Heroine, I think. And it wasn't until my like 8th or 9th listen that I really clocked that it was even there, because it melds very well with the whole soundscape.
Yeah, or you get like a little bit of like three lines that we were just talking about from Writer in the Dark. You get these like touches of violin to kind of lift those along. And yeah, it feels very textured. I mean, I really like Jack Antonoff. I think he's really, like, I do really like his work, and I mean, I never know, you know, I haven't got a trained enough ear to be able to say, well, this is where his influence comes in and where hers, you know, is taking a step back. But I do think they've created something that does kind of mix that. I associate Jack Antonoff with kind of like synthy, bright, little bit of violin, maybe like that kind of sound, which is not something I associate with Lorde too much. And I like the way that they've come together.
Yeah, I also think something that people talked about around Lorde's first album was parallels with Kate Bush.
Mm.
I think partly just because of the way she moves on stage and also because of her vocal range as well. You know, she can sing really low, but then switch a much lighter, more ethereal voice quite easily. Mm. And I think in a song like Writer in the Dark, she's really developed that side of things. So the way the chorus is very, very low, where she says the actual phrase "writer in the dark," and then she goes right up high for the bit about your mother.
She does that in some of her other ones. Is it Green Light where she's doing that as well, where she goes like first two lines of the chorus are in the lower octave and then she like switches to the higher octave later on?
And the switch is so interesting because normally people don't like to do that. When you're like trained to sing, you're trained to cover up the differences. So you're supposed to, what's called your chest voice and your head voice, your chest voice being your lower voice and your head voice being the higher, less supported sound. You work really hard to smooth out the differences between that. Everyone has like a breaking note where you have to switch from one to the other. And Lorde just doesn't do that. She just sings with what sometimes sounds like two different voices. And I really like it as an effect. And I really like it that she hasn't like allowed that to be trained out of her.
Yeah, there is so much personality in her voice. We talked about that little, like, that she does on Homemade Dynamite. But she does, there's loads of little things like that where she's just, like, literally making noises. And I really like that about her, that she'll bring in that personality. I really like on, I think it's Hard Feelings Again, where there's lots of, like, and then they, like, cut it. And, you know, there's just all these kind of weird breathy things going on. And it's so layered. You know, you could hear one of her songs like four times and not pick up on something that you will pick up on the 12th listen. And yeah, I just can tell that this is going to be in like such big rotation for me. I'm just going to listen to it loads and loads, I can tell.
This also gave me a new thought that I hadn't had before, which was weird, which was, so I've just decided to buy a record player and like join the people.
That's so random, because I got vinyl. One this weekend.
Did you really?
Yeah, because my dad, I went, it's Father's Day, shout out to my dad, Adrian, and I went to see dad for Father's Day and left his house with his old record player. I used to have one, but it broke, and he was like, do you want this one, because I've got a new one? And I was like, sure.
I've never had one of my own, and my parents have one that I like used intermittently when I was a teenager, but mostly just for their Beatles records. But I was finally like, I want to have a record player of my own because I want to like sit and listen to whole albums all the way through and not be tempted to skip them or anything like that. So I've been like researching it, and then the Lorde album came out on Friday and I was like, I want to buy this on vinyl.
I don't think it's available on vinyl.
Why not, Lorde? I want to buy it.
I brought home Joni Mitchell Blue, which is one of my favourite ever albums. And I saw that in a Guardian profile over the weekend, Lorde said that she wants to be like Joni Mitchell. And I do think there's even a visual similarity between the Blue cover and the Melodrama cover, like that kind of face in blue light. And yeah, I mean, I think it's obviously like extremely flattering for anyone to be compared to Joni Mitchell, but you know, I think there's something in that.
I think so too. Yeah, Joni Mitchell, Kate Bush are my two like reference points for Lorde. And I just think it's amazing what she's doing at a time when I feel like even the most individual artists are in some cases having to like give in to the sound that works for the charts, if you know what I mean. So like become a bit more poppy or include slightly more like electro-y tropical types beats in order, or like guest on other songs in order to try and bring attention to their other stuff. And Lorde's just like, nope, I shall do synthy violin-y songs about being unhappy.
Yeah, I almost don't think she could do anything else. No. I just don't think it would work. Have you seen any of her live performances of any of these songs? She's done like quite a few.
No, I haven't.
I've just been in awe of her. So there was like, I think it was ages ago now, she did a performance of Green Light and everyone was gifting it, being like, Lorde dances like a fully insane person. But
I love it too, though. I love it so much.
Yeah, and she recently did a performance of, I'm going to say Perfect Places, and I hope I've got that right, with like kind of plants on the back of her suit. And then she like, during the performance, like ripped them all off. And it was amazing. And I bought tickets to see Lorde for when her tour comes to the UK in September. So I'm so excited. Mm,
yes.
It'll be great.
Oh God, I'm clean out of air in my lungs. It's all gone. Played it so nonchalant. It's time we dance with the truth. Move along with the truth. Ooh. Hey, we're sleeping through all the days. I'm acting like I don't see every ribbon you used to tie yourself to me. But my hips have missed your hips, so let's get to know the kicks. Will you sway with me? Go astray with me. You're queen of the weekend. Ain't a pill that could touch our rush. But what will we do when we're sober? I'm a dream with a fever. Bet you wish you could touch our rush. But what will we do when we're sober? These are the games of the weekend. We pretend that we just don't care, but we care. I'm a dream with a fever. Bet you wish you could touch our rush.
Now we're going to talk about Pitch Battle, which is the BBC's new Saturday night singing talent show, replacing The Voice, which has been moved to ITV. It features choirs and singing groups from around the UK competing in various musical challenges for a £50,000 prize. It's hosted by Mel Giedroyc, and the judges include Gareth Malone, Khalees, Will Young and Joe Jonas.
I didn't really know what to expect from this show, but it is basically like X Factor, but for
choirs.
Yeah, choirs. I thought they were going to go for like one of those names that's, you know, like Pitch Perfect, because they do have the guy who helped with Pitch Perfect, like helping them all choreograph and design their performances. You know, like one of those punny names. But am I missing something? There's not a thing called a bitch battle, right?
No, but there is a thing called a pitched battle.
Oh, okay. So it is kind of punny.
Which is, I don't know, but it's like a military thing. So you'd say like a pitched battle between the British and French forces.
Okay,
that kind
so
of
I was
thing.
Missing something. Fine.
But it's a bit random.
All right,
military.
We'll allow it, BBC, whatever. I'm just going to go in with this. I found it almost unwatchable.
I know, it's unbearable.
It was so cringeworthy. Like, I actually couldn't bear it.
I know, but I don't know. I came out the other side.
No.
I did.
How?
I don't think I'm going to watch any more of it. But I was like, is this amazing or is this terrible? 45 minutes in, who can say?
But also, half an hour in, I'd watched one battle.
I know, it's so long.
It's so slow. Like, compared to X Factor, where they're literally like, clip of someone warbling, clip of someone warbling, clip of someone warbling, and then like, 5 minute long thing with sob story.
Yeah.
Like, with this, it was literally like, we've got half an hour, you're going to meet each of these choirs, we're going to get to know, like, where they live, we'll get them to do, you know, a sing-off against each other, we'll have lengthy time for critique from the judges, then we'll get them to do another one, which is like a riff-off, whatever that is, and then, it just went on for so long.
It's so long and it's so spacious. As a format, it just doesn't really work at all.
Baggy,
but
very baggy.
There are certain elements of it which I found completely beguiling.
Go on then.
One of which is a choir of middle-aged ladies just like singing 80s pop hits.
Yeah.
I'm never not going to love
that. There was plenty of that. It's funny because I thought that by moving away from the kind of like pop idol-y format, we might get some music that is not pop idol-y. But everyone was singing like Beyonce, Katy Perry, I don't know, Bruno Mars, all of that. It just constant.
So I think the musical influences for this show, the repertoire that they've given these choirs, could be summed up as, it's halfway between the movie Pitch Perfect and Glee. Those are the reference
points
for this.
But even Glee had Rachel doing On My Own from Les Miserables. But like, there's none of that. It's literally just like Robbie Williams' Angels. I don't know.
It is dreadful. It's completely dreadful. I don't want to pretend it's not. But I don't know. Something about the sight of like choirs of ordinary people trying hard really gets to me.
It's obviously friendlier than any other of these shows.
Yes. And there were moments where I genuinely laughed out loud. Like when they do the riff-off, which even annoyed me in the movie Pitch Perfect. Because the idea of a riff-off is apparently that choirs compete and improvise around a particular theme and have to like pick up from each other, and it's like a battle in that sense.
Yeah,
it's not. It's like highly choreographed and arranged, and everyone's learned all their notes off by heart. There's mm-hmm. nothing improvised about it. So that is annoying. But I did enjoy the format in some cases where like one choir singing and then they like cut to a shot of the other choir having to listen to them sing.
That's so poor them. That
which is
so
really
hard.
Funny.
Because they're kind of like dancing or doing like a little hand gesture that implies like, what? You're trying your hardest? Yeah. What?
So, but I liked it best when the other choir was just like fully into what their competitors were doing.
Yeah.
And there was a great one. I can't remember what song they were doing, but the other choir were like singing something really good. And two of the guys in them were just waltzing. They were just like waltzing with each other.
Yeah.
It's like, this is nice.
There's also a weird thing, which I think often happens with like kind of big American formats that are taken on by like British people. And I don't think this is a copy of an American show. But,
I don't think so.
But it feels quite American in its just style. And they've got this guy from Pitch Perfect being like,
announcer voice.
Someone's going to get me a halo tonight. Here's Beyonce. Or, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's really cringe. And then there's like Mel from the Bake Off literally being like, oh, I like your beard. And you're like, this tonally just does not match up at all.
It doesn't work.
I love Mel. Like, props to Mel.
But it also, I like that the BBC is like finding her more presenting work now that she stayed loyal after the Bake Off, which Channel 4.
Yeah. I hope they're paying her plenty of dollar for this.
Yeah, I don't think this is going to take off. I was reading some news stories about it. Apparently it was beaten in the ratings by The Voice Kids on ITV.
Oh God.
So
it's like all the things you found cringy about like your friend's university a cappella group. You know, like when people sing with those like angry eyebrows but manic smile. And it's like, I'm doing this. And you're like, I can't.
Yes.
So for that reason, I think I'll like hide under the table if it comes on TV.
Yes, definitely. It did spark in me though. I can't remember how old I was when the first series of Fame Academy was on, but I was obsessed
Sinead.
With it. David Sneddon.
David Sneddon with his little dog tags.
And I am very happy to admit that for my birthday, the year that it was on, I went to the Wembley Arena to see the live tour of Fame Academy. And
that's amazing.
It's still one of the best gigs I've ever been to.
I think I've mentioned this maybe on Seriously before, but I have so many very specific David Sneddon memories. I remember David Sneddon performing his third, I think, single on some Saturday morning kids TV show, and they got his brother to introduce it, who was in the crowd, and he was like, this is David Sneddon's debut song, and he obviously didn't know what debut meant, so he was just like, it's great, it's a great song, here's his debut song. And I remember being, even as a child, being like, something seems off about this.
That's not what that means.
David Sneddon is not a real pop star.
But anyway, Pitch Battle to me has the same vibe as Fame Academy. The BBC tries to do a big budget, big format reality show.
Yeah.
It will not work. It will not get renewed. But some of the people on it are charming.
Yeah, I completely agree. But I'm still going to hide under the table when it comes up.
Yeah, totally.
Her eyes make the stars look like they're not shining. Her hair falls perfectly without her trying. She's so beautiful, and I tell her every day, when I see your face.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So last week we decided to have a read of Naomi Alderman's The Power, which just won the Bailey's Prize for fiction. And it's this weird dystopian idea. It starts kind of set now, I would say. And all these kind of like 15-year-old girls start to discover that they have a weird electric power and which they can use on other people to basically electrocute them in different ways. And it kind of rolls on from there, and it basically imagines what would happen if suddenly sexism could go completely and dramatically in the other way, right?
Yeah, so it takes the power that has always propped up patriarchy as the dominant societal system, i.e. men are physically stronger and can physically subdue women if it comes to that, and turns it round. You know, young women start developing this power and they can awaken it in older women. Mm-hmm. And once it's awoken, all future women born will have it too. Mm-hmm. It flips around in viewpoint from different people. So you get a young girl who's running away from home, another girl who's part of a kind of gangster family whose mum's been murdered in front of her, and that's what triggers her knowing that she can do it. Mm-hmm. And then I think it's meant to be in the US, isn't it? Like a woman, much older woman, yeah, who's a mayor.
As an aside, it really frustrated me at these points how much they would like gloss over where exactly it was.
Yeah.
They kept saying, the governor at one point goes, "I'm the governor of this state, Margot, and you're just the mayor of your urban metropolitan area." And you're like, wait, what? No one's ever said that.
Say the name of a town.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also a young journalist from Nigeria who's one of the first people to like
document. Yeah, who's extremely lovable. Because it's weird, I think. Sorry, we're really going into it already. But I think it's difficult to pitch me a book where you're like, hey, this is a book about like what would happen if a matriarchy was real. And we've got these three female perspectives and this like male one who's like starting to feel oppressed. And I'd be like, ew, no, I don't want to hear from the man who's starting to feel oppressed. But actually, it's a really, really great perspective to have. And he is a really, really likable character. And when he does feel afraid and you know, scared by what's happening, you actually do empathize with him totally.
You do. And his perspective also gives you a really interesting thing, which is that I don't want for a second to suggest that women get physical power over men and everything is great.
Yeah.
Because actually everything descends into total chaos, because just like some men abuse their power now for evil, some women do the same thing.
Yeah.
And there are instances of like rape and like, it's just horrible.
It's really interesting the way she's done it, actually, because if you'd sold this idea to me as like, oh, a matriarchy happens and then loads of violence happens and it's terrible, I'd be like, oh, that seems kind of shit, because I don't know if I buy that. I don't know if I buy that. I feel, you know, there's a part of me, there's a little voice in me that says like, oh, aren't women a bit nicer though?
Yeah.
Which is probably internalized sexism. And she deals with that really well at the beginning. It's set up as these two writers writing to each other about the novel The Power, which is written by this man called Neil, who is like an oppressed man, like 3,000 years in the future, writing to his like female mentor from the Men's Writing Association.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, you know, would you look over this? He's like really apologetic. Oh, it's like so subtle.
The email's amazing. Like, I read the email and got genuine chills because I was like, I have written these emails.
Yeah, it's really well done. Yeah. I think that's one of her real strengths as a writer, is being able to observe like how people actually talk to each other and the ways in which this can be gendered and stuff. And yeah, and she replies back saying something like, hey, oh, Neil, like love the manuscript, really cool, like, oh, you included some male soldiers, you naughty boy, you know how I like those kinds of things, sexy. And then she's like, I can't help but feel though that wouldn't a world run by men be, you know, inherently kinder, safer, and dare I say it, sexier than a world run by by women? And you're like, oh my god, that's literally what I was thinking to myself, I'm so bad.
Yeah.
So it's really clever.
And there's a bit later on where she says, I know you don't want to be pigeonholed as just a men's writer,
yeah,
but have you considered x y and z? which is classic.
It's great.
And then another bit where he's essentially positing that although historical records have been lost, a society run by men did once exist and was overturned by the awakening of the power, and society is reformed along those lines. And she's saying, you know, I just don't really buy that could ever happen. Is there evidence for this? You know, it makes sense in evolutionary terms that women would just be stronger and more powerful because they're the ones that carry the babies. So of course they would have, you know, reactive, aggressive powers to protect the young, you know.
Yeah.
And basically she just flips all of the bullshit science arguments for gender roles around and shows that they work just as well the other way around.
Exactly. And it's really interesting because she does it so subtly, because in the beginning, I think you're so behind all these women who are finally, because a lot of it is rooted in these women's stories that are plagued by patriarchy. Mm. So we get two stories from people who are experiencing quite bad domestic violence. So as you say, this girl's mother is murdered by two men in front of her. And then we also get this girl who's basically being abused by her adoptive father. And, you know, you're so behind them finally getting a bit of revenge, essentially. Mm. And you kind of don't care if they take it too far because you're like, great, you know, you deserve your revenge on like the male populace. And she kind of has to quite carefully get you to a point where you're like, actually, this is bad. And she does it in a way that isn't like, you know, those MRAs are onto something. There's a whole like section of like Reddit comments between all these different men who are like saying things like, you know, we should just take a gun to all the schools and shoot all the 15-year-olds. And you never sympathize with these people. You never sympathize with their perspective, but you still are like, damn it, this matriarchy thing is not good. It's not going well. And I really like the way she explores that shift quite subtly in different ways. There's this great recurring motif of the news discussion program.
Yes.
And it's like, it starts off being Kristen and Tom, and like Kristen is basically Tom's like glamorous sidekick. And then eventually Tom starts to get so frustrated by everything that's going on with the news, and it becomes clear that Kristen's got the power. And then Tom like has a rant on screen about like men's rights and gets fired. And then they bring in, I can't remember,
Steve,
I don't know. And Steve comes in and he's like super handsome. And, you know, they're like, hey, Kristen, have you thought about wearing glasses? It might like help your presence. And like Steve is saying things like, oh, well, I couldn't possibly understand all this, Kristen. You know about this way more than I do. And, you know, it's just really interesting to see that see those things kind of switch over in that quite subtle way. I thought that was really clever.
Yeah, something about the style and structure of this book that really struck me that not many authors can do is it's so internet literate.
Mm. Yeah, so, really internet literate. You're right.
In fact,
I didn't even notice that.
I know, which is why it's so good. I didn't realise it until I got right to the end. I was like, so, you know, the prologue and the epilogue, but this book are emails. There's, as you say, this whole verbatim section that are like Reddit comments. Yeah. And then also sort of more stealth stuff about how girls have been sharing private videos of different things you can do with the power for months before any adults actually find out, which, you know, anyone who's done any like reporting on how teens use the internet will know that that's, you know, that's perfectly possible. Girls can do that. And yeah, and how one of the characters ends up as this kind of like prophet, or like, she leads this kind of almost new religion cult thing. And it works via the internet. Her message gets spread in viral videos. Mm-hmm. They fundraise via the internet, you know. And it all, as you say, you don't notice it because it works.
Yeah, I would never have thought that this was like a book about the internet, but there is so much internet stuff in there. And I have like a little paragraph that I wanted to read that I think so well kind of sums up why women having this violent ability just makes the entire world shift. Mm. And it reminded me of there's this moment in The Handmaid's Tale in the book where, you know, when they first get all their money taken away, and she's like to her husband, like, this is absolutely terrible, and he's very like, oh no, you poor thing, but like, don't worry, I'll look after you. And there's a little voice in her head that's like, oh my god, is he enjoying this already? He likes looking after me, he likes being in charge, he basically likes being in control. And then she's like, no, that's a terrible thought, he's my loving husband, and like pushes it away. And there's this moment where the mayor that we were talking about is having an argument with the governor that we were talking about, and she says, it doesn't matter that she shouldn't. What matters is she could if she wanted. The power to hurt is a kind of wealth. She speaks quite suddenly across Daniel, sharp, like the knock at the door. Don't waste my time with this, Daniel, she says. They have this like ongoing conversation, and then she goes, she thinks, that is how a man speaks, and that is why. And you're like, oh my God, that is so terrifying to think that actually the way that we function as a society is by having men speak over women and speak in a way that is dominant to women, probably essentially because if they wanted to, they could physically overpower us. And that's kind of the root of it all. And it's so weird to see it like spelt out like that in normal workplace dialogue. but it was kind of creepy to me. It made me freak out.
Yeah, I underlined that passage as well, actually, because for the exact same reason, that the way that she highlights that, you know, patriarchy is founded in violence, which I feel like is probably words I've said before, but not necessarily understood to the same extent.
It's almost painfully obvious, and yet there are just moments in this book where you're like reeling anew because you're like, oh my god, this is so messed up.
So yeah, I think we highly recommend this book. It's been likened quite a lot to The Handmaid's Tale, and I think in the acknowledgements actually Naomi Alderman writes that she got to be part of some writer mentoring scheme with Margaret Atwood.
Oh wow.
So basically the influences are not an accident. It's very much like deliberate and acknowledged. And I've heard a few reviewers saying that they think in the same way that The Handmaid's Tale has kind of been repurposed for each new generation, I feel like The Power is going to get that same status.
Definitely. So for next week, I want to recommend you something that I've been really, really into, even though we're super, super late to it, which is Search Party, which is kind of pitched as like millennial comedy meets like noirish thriller. So it's these four New York friends. Even friends seems like too strong a word. They all went to college together, and then the main girl, played by Alia Shawkat, sees a missing poster for someone that they went to college with, and she's like, oh my god, did you know Chantel is missing? And none of her friends really, really care, but she becomes obsessed by this and decides, you know, that she has to figure out what happened to her, and basically becomes an undercover detective. And so the whole thing kind of veers between like very, very penetrating jokes. You witness people, you know, behaving terribly at the brunch table, and then like, wait, is someone following her? Like your heart suddenly starts beating. So it's great. I really hope you'll like it.
Yeah, this sounds really good. I've read a few interviews with Alia Shawkat kind of promoting this, and it has sounded really good. So I'm excited to try it.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Seriously, the pop culture podcast from The New Statesman.
If you enjoyed the show, why not subscribe to make sure you never miss another episode? We're available in all the usual places you get podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, where you could also leave us a review.
We've got lots of events coming up this summer, including festivals, live episodes, and quizzes. Find out more and buy tickets at seriouslypod.com/events.
We're available many other places on the internet, including on Twitter, Facebook, and Tumblr. We're SeriouslyPod on all of them.
We love getting your recommendations for things we should feature on the show, or just hearing your thoughts on what we've discussed. Get in touch on social media or email us on seriouslypod@gmail.com.
And if you feel strongly that more pop culture needs to be taken seriously, spread the word and tell your friends and family about the podcast.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.